Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, September 25th, 2015. Pope Francis tells the UN General Assembly that human rights must be put above partisan politics in South Sudan and elsewhere.
In every situation of conflict, as in Ukraine, Syria, Iraq, Libya, South Sudan, and the Great Lakes region, real human beings take precedence over partisan interests, however legitimate the latter may be.
And the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan says President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have no excuse for refusing to implement the Addis peace deal.
The agreement that all the parties signed had deadlines for achieving transitional tasks. And these transitional tasks, all the parties should commit themselves to trying to achieve those deadlines. This should not be allowed to slip.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, says leaders on both sides of South Sudan's conflict are responsible for implementing the IGAD Plus brokered peace agreement they signed last month. Booth says IGAD Plus member countries and their partners stand ready to work with President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar on implementing the deal, and says the warring parties have no excuse for failing to stick to what they have signed.
The implementation, let me stress to your listeners, is first and foremost the responsibility of the South Sudanese parties. They are the ones who signed the peace agreement, and ultimately they, as the leaders of South Sudan, need to show the leadership, the courage, and the determination to implement what they have signed on to. The workshop in Addis last week was critical, and I think there was agreement that was reached by the government and the opposition on some critical elements. One was how they would separate their forces, particularly in areas of Upper Nile State and Unity State, where they are in very close proximity and where fighting has broken out from time to time. They also, I think, reached agreement on the establishment of a joint operation center to coordinate security issues and also the establishment of the shared unified command. And I think what's important now is that those things they have agreed on, they need to move forward and implement. Those things that still need further discussion, such as the security arrangements for Juba, should be discussed further. This is something that that is absolutely critical. If the security arrangements are not in place, it's very hard to move forward on forming the transitional government and getting it established in Juba.
Let's move forward to that question of the transitional government. Information Minister Michael Makuei told us yesterday that the deadlock at the security workshop means deadlines for withdrawing foreign troops, for demilitarization of Juba, and for setting up a transitional government of national unity has been pushed back. And Makuei is saying that the deadline is based on the workshop, and he's blaming IGAD for delaying the full implementation of the peace deal. But my understanding of reading the agreement is that all the deadlines are based on when the parties actually sign the agreement. How does the United States interpret Mr. Makuei's sentiments that the deadlines are pushed back because of the delays at the workshop?
The agreement that all the parties signed had deadlines for achieving transitional tasks. And these transitional tasks, all the parties should commit themselves to trying to achieve those deadlines. That's our position. This should not be allowed to slip. If it slips, that gives the opportunity for the agreement to have difficulties in implementation. Implementation is essentially the responsibility of the South Sudanese parties. IGAD is there to facilitate. The IGAD Plus partners are there to facilitate. We're prepared to work with South Sudan in the full range of implementation of this agreement. But we need the goodwill of the parties to resolve these differences.
The government keeps saying that the sovereignty of South Sudan is undermined by the peace agreement. It says that the fact that Monitoring and Verification Commission will be headed by someone who is not South Sudan indicates that outsiders are going to take control of this young nation. But there are historic examples to this. Germany after World War II, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and East Timor What is your response to the government allegations that their country is being taken over by foreigners?
Well, the Joint Monitoring Evaluation Commission, the JMEC, which needs to be established because it's absolutely critical element of the peace agreement. It's the JMEC that will oversee the replacement for the monitoring and verification mission of IGAD, which will monitor the separation and cantonment of forces. There's a whole list of other entities that will be overseen by the JMEC. Now, the JMEC is not going to direct the South Sudanese in what they do. It will be the peace agreement that directs what should be done. All the JMEC is going to be doing is it's going to be reporting to the IGAD countries who have signed as guarantors to the agreement and to other partners who witnessed the agreement whether, indeed, the South Sudanese parties are fulfilling what they've agreed to, whether they are implementing the agreement, whether they are meeting their deadlines, and if not, what the reasons are and what might be done to help South Sudan to do that. This is not an infringement of sovereignty. This is fulfilling the responsibility of the guarantors and other partners to help South Sudan succeed in achieving what they've signed, a peace agreement that will bring the country back together, a peace agreement that will lead to reform of the security sector, a peace agreement that will lead to the drafting of a new constitution by South Sudanese for South Sudan. It will lead to the holding of an election so that South Sudanese, in a democratic process, can again choose their leaders and how their country is to be governed. It's going to lead to a South Sudan that will see the government held responsible for the resources of the country and ensuring that the resources of the country are used for the benefit of the people. So there are many things in this peace agreement that are there for the benefit of the people of South Sudan. And the role of the JMEC is to ensure that and monitor that, indeed, the leaders are doing what they committed to do on behalf of the people of South Sudan.
That's Donald Booth, the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan. He was speaking to me at the State Department here in Washington earlier today. The Office of the Special Envoy provides funds for South Sudan in Focus. In a powerful speech to the United Nations General Assembly in New York today, Pope Francis called on South Sudan's and other world leaders to value human lives over their ambitions. Speaking in Spanish through an interpreter, the pontiff said,
"In every situation of conflict, as in Ukraine, Syria, Iraq, Libya, South Sudan, and the Great Lakes region, real human beings take precedence over partisan interests, however legitimate the latter may be. In wars and conflicts, there are individual persons, our brothers and sisters, men and women, young and old, boys and girls, who weep, suffer, and die."
The 78-year-old pontiff said war is a negation of human rights and an obstacle to progress.
"If we want true integral human development for all, we must work tirelessly to avoid war between nations and between peoples. To this end, there is a need to ensure the uncontested rule of law and tireless recourse to negotiation, mediation, and arbitration as proposed by the Charter of the United Nations, which constitutes truly a fundamental juridical norm."
The pontiff said by protecting environment, world leaders and financial authorities could help lift millions out of poverty.
"The natural environment and the vast ranks of men and women who are excluded. These are sectors closely interconnected and made increasingly fragile by the dominant political and economic relationships. That is why their rights must be forcefully affirmed by working to protect the environment and by putting an end to exclusion."
He said education is key to ending exclusion and said girls must be allowed to go to school, and he warned world leaders of the consequences of allowing extreme poverty to continue.
"Our world demands of all government leaders a will which is effective, practical, constant, with concrete steps and immediate measures for preserving and improving the natural environment, and thus putting an end as quickly as possible to the phenomenon of social and economic exclusion, with its painful consequences of human trafficking, the marketing of human organs and tissues, sexual exploitation of boys and girls, slave labor, including prostitution, the drug and weapons trade, terrorism, and international organized crime.
After his speech to the United Nations, Francis held a prayer service at the memorial in downtown New York to the thousands of victims of the attacks on the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. He is due later today to say Mass at the Madison Square Garden Sports Arena in New York before traveling to Philadelphia for the final leg of his first visit to the United States. Pope Francis is due to travel to Kenya, Uganda, and Central African Republic in late November. There are around 199 million Roman Catholics in Africa, according to an ongoing survey of the world religions by the Gallup polling organization. Ayan Bier spoke with Stan Chu Ilio, author of The Church and Development in Africa. Ilo says the Pope's visit to the United Nations will help the world leaders to focus on global solidarity.
When the Pope argues about our developing a global solidarity, a solidarity that confronts the challenges of climate change, that confronts migration, poverty, international terrorism. So what I think a primary message from the heart of Africa that I think the Pope will also carry to the United Nations is this idea of Ubuntu. We are here together, participation. How can we create an economic, social, and cultural system, an international order, where every person counts, where the gifts and talents of every human being is actually being developed for the common good.
Where does the Pope fit in the social context of a continent where gay rights and divorce are not always welcome?
A lot of us who are in this conversation, we tend to think which battle can you win first, you know, and then it will be some gradual incremental engagement with social questions. So I think that's where I see Pope Francis coming in. He's not going to provide all the answers, nor do I think globally we all have to adopt similar answers to social questions. We also have to accept the diversity of perspective in order to find some harmony in living together.
You mean like in the case of the Roman Catholic Church banning the use of contraceptives versus measures of controlling the spread of AIDS in Africa through the use of contraceptives?
It's been publicly discussed among us African theologians, priests and bishops about how to find a middle ground, you know, a message that, you know, presents the therapeutic dimension of contraception over and against understanding all preventative measure adopted, to combat AIDS as being radically opposed to life. So those are two distinctions that have to be made.
You talk pretty disappointedly about the UN's Millennium Development Goals in your book. You state that they are a one-size-fits-all solution, which does not always work for a continent like Africa with issues that are broad and unique. In fact, one of the examples that you use is Darfur, and you say that the solutions in Darfur may not be the same as those in Malawi or Rwanda. Could you go a little more in depth about this?
When you look at the contours of the sociocultural problems facing Africa, in Sudan, for instance, Sudan offers one of the ugly faces of conflicts that are convoluted because it's not only religious, but it's also racial as well as ethnic. And then you find when you talk about conflict resolution or the semi-permanence of humanitarian intervention in Africa, Sudan offers you a classic case because ever since I was a child, there has always been wars, fighting, coups, and killing, and human destruction and cultural destruction in Sudan, which is one of the most ancient African civilizations. We must find the cultural history and narratives of particular people in order to enter into that history to help them, because I think that is the bane of development in Africa, is this lack of sensitivity to what works for particular communities.
That was Stan Chu-Ilo, the author of Church and Development in Africa. He spoke with my colleague Ayen Bior before Pope Francis addressed the UN General Assembly. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, SPLM in opposition officials attend a workshop on curbing sexual violence. That story when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what ideal qualities would you like to have in your spouse?
Somebody who take me as I am. And then feel that, no, this person, I have to give all to him.
A simple person who understands me. If I did mistake to him, he can easily say sorry and forgive me and understand the situation I was in.
Number one, she should be a kind person. Number two, she should be very understanding. Number three, she should be godly.
I like my spouse to be very honest, caring, loving, and taking up his responsibility as a husband seriously.
A listening person, because I can talk a lot. So if I get somebody that can listen, it will be a bonus. So that will be an ideal quality.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Western Bahr al-Ghazal state officials reopened Wau Airport today after it was renovated and upgraded to handle international flights. The airport's runway has been expanded to 2.5 kilometers to accommodate bigger planes. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
At the official opening, Golden Wings, the only commercial airline flying to Wau, resumed normal flights in and out of Wau today. South Supreme Airlines, which began operations in September 2013, recently halted operations in South Sudan due to hard currency problems. Wau Airport Director Daniel Nial says for the first time, international flights will come directly to Wau Airport. He says South African Airways has signed a bilateral agreement to land international flights in Wau. Nial says the refurbished airport will allow cargo planes of up to 100 tons to land here.
The past two layers wouldn't contain because the concentration, it wouldn't receive the big aircraft because it was not completed. And we stopped this big flight to operate because if we had allowed them, then they will damage the pavement. And now, actually, we are able to receive this bigger aircraft because we know the strength of the runway. They can receive a plane that has 70 to 100 tons, but by then we were limiting it to 20 to 30 tons for the bigger planes.
Nial says the expanded airport will benefit everyone.
Wau Airport will be able to benefit the local. As you are aware, there's a problem of road connection. People can use Golden Wing and other companies that are in place to transport them to Juba.
Officials have been tight-lipped about the cost of the airport's expansion. A construction firm called Well Done International Company began work on the airport in June of this year. Nial says traders who can afford air service can now charter direct flights from Dubai to Juba as well as from other countries. But after 20 months of conflict, South Sudan's high poverty rate and skyrocketing commodity prices, few South Sudanese are likely to travel by air. Wau resident Monica Ajurjong, who just returned from a trip to seek medical care abroad, praises the government's effort but says airline companies should reduce their fares.
Flight tickets have increased from 750 South Sudanese pounds to 1,200. And if you're going for treatment, it becomes more expensive. But now we have no option as our roads are bad and insecure.
Another Wau resident, quote, Quoch, agrees but points out that the expansion of Wau Airport will increase economic opportunities in the greater Bahr el Ghazal region. Speaking in Arabic, Quoch says, the airport improvements will encourage other countries to invest in South Sudan. He says it also will bring in imported goods and build relationships with other countries. To ensure the work was completed in time, officials limited flights to Wau to only 3 days per week. Niel says officials plan to expand the runway further by 8 more meters to allow cargo planes like the Boeing 747 to land at the airport. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in Wau.
Still in Wau, authorities yesterday arrested more than 20 retail traders who are charged with cheating consumers. The traders are accused of tampering with the sizes of tins used for measuring grains. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Wau.
The metallic tins or gallons are known locally as malwa, and mesa cereals such as sorghum, a staple food for most South Sudanese. Municipal authorities say the 22 traders arrested sell sorghum and insert small metal pieces to fill the bottom of measuring tins, making them appear hold more food. Typically, the tins hold about 3/4 of the food rather than the full amount. While resident Teresa Ricardo frequently buys sorghum from the town's main market, she welcomes the government has to protect consumers like her.
The malwa we buy these days is not the same quantity like what we used to buy. It used to feed the family for more than 2 days, but now it can't. I encourage the government to continue with the exercise and protect citizens' rights. After all, it is not easy for us to get money.
Another resident who preferred that her name not be used says traders have exploited consumers like her for far too long. She says authorities should inspect weighing scale for sugar and rice.
We cannot continue buying things measured using malwa at 35 South Sudanese pounds, which cannot even feed the family for 2 days because they have corrupted it.
Municipal authorities say they decided to take action against the traders after several consumers complained that traders were not using the right size of measures. Julius Emmanuel, a municipal executive director for Block C area in Wau, says all the traders arrested will soon be arraigned in court. Emmanuel says local government officials will open a case against the traders under Article 173 and 174 regarding the use of illegal measurements for exploiting consumers. The suspects defend the practice, saying sorghum wholesale prices have risen to the point where they can no longer make a profit. Gabriel Ayi, one of the traders arrested on Wednesday, says if he increases the price of sorghum, consumers would not buy it. He says that leaves him with no option. Reduce the size of the measuring tin and sell it at the same price. Ayi says when they increase the price, it will not bring traders the money they need to survive. Officials say from now on, they will routinely inspect the traders' measuring tins and weighing scales to ensure that they do not cheat consumers. Food prices in Wau, as in other parts of South Sudan, have remained high as the South Sudanese pound continues to lose value against the U.S. dollar. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in Wau.
Seven SPLM in opposition military officials are wrapping up a 4-day workshop on combating sexual violence today. The workshop in Addis Ababa is sponsored by the UN Mission in South Sudan and the Office of the Special Representatives of the UN Secretary General on Sexual Violence in Conflict. Ayen Bior has this report from Washington.
The United Nations says sexual violence is trivialized by South Sudanese law enforcement officials and the community. The UN says survivors are often forced to marry perpetrators as a remedy, and medical, legal, and psychological services are available only in limited areas. Dixon Gatlog, a spokesperson for the SPLM in opposition, says the action plan drafted in Addis is aimed at ending sexual violence, but also sets guidelines on how to investigate and prosecute alleged sex crimes in South Sudan.
The purpose was to make sure that SPLM-SPLA is ready and is strongly committed to the combat of sexual violence, including addressing impunity for such crime, and also how to combat it in the current conflict in the Republic of South Sudan.
Gatlog says it will take at least 1 year to fully implement the action plan. He says SPLM and opposition leader Riek Machar will appoint an official arbiter who will oversee and manage efforts to implement the plan.
The high-level focal points that need to be appointed by the chairman and commander-in-chief from the SPLA, and also they work on the implementation task force. And this task force, this would comprise of the senior staff from the SPLM. And at the same time, a special investigation and monitoring and documentation unit.
Gatlog says a special investigation and prosecution unit will oversee sex-related crimes. He says the body will urge the government to pass more laws that prohibit sexual violence and mandate the investigation of alleged sexual crimes in a timely manner.
This is already, it is a unit which is already put down, and, you know, the focal points are going to be, designated among the existing military and moral orientation officers at the division levels, the brigades, battalion, and companies. You know, it is a process. It is like a structural arrangement that is starting from the top up to the bottom.
Gatlog says it's important that all South Sudanese leaders come together to address the problem of sexual violence and to undertake measures to bring the perpetrators to justice. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. In his speech to the UN General Assembly in New York today, Pope Francis called on the leaders of South Sudan, as well as other leaders, to value human lives over their own ambitions. Speaking in Spanish, the Pope said in every situation of conflict, including South Sudan, real human beings take precedence over partisan interests. In wars and conflicts, the pontiff added, there are men and women and boys and girls who weep, suffer, and die. The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donald Booth, says both President Kiir and Riek Machar are responsible for implementing the compromise peace deal they signed last month. Booth says the IGAD plus countries who mediated the agreement are prepared to work with both leaders to help implement it. He says the warring parties have no excuse for failing to adhere to the agreement. And finally, seven SPLM and opposition officials finished a four-day workshop on combating sexual violence today in Addis Ababa. It was sponsored by the UN Mission in South Sudan and the Office of the Special Representative of the U.S. Secretary General on Sexual Violence. An SPLM IO spokesperson says the group drafted an action plan to stop sexual violence against women and girls and to help survivors. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Mawazo by Diamond. Ningekuwa na uwezo ningekunywa kapombe nikupoze mawazo. Maana mchana kutwa hata usiku silali mapenzi yangu kwako. Ningekuwa na uwezo ningekunywa kapombe nikupoze mawazo. Maana mchana kutwa hata usiku silali mapenzi yangu kwako. Sikujua mapenzi bara tena ni maradhi ya moyo kupendaga. Tena mapenzi kara yanajenga chuki na choyo kwenye kaba. Mtu wangu na thamani ina maana kweli ya kujua. Chapurutani, ya mapenzi yangu wakasimua. Mtu wangu na thamani, ina maana kweli ya kubijua. Uguli chapurutani, tani, hata mua kuchimua. Ina imani, ningekuwa na uwezo ningekunywa hata pombe nikupunguze mawazo. Maana mchana kutwa hata usiku silali mapenzi yangu kikwazo. We have been listening to Diamond with the song Mawazo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We have good news for you. You can leave a message about this program on our Facebook page. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.